This is a conversation that was hosted on the Clubhouse app, November 9th, 2021, and was a live panel discussion titled Sustaining a Sculpture Practice, where I interviewed Courtney Puckett and Carl Dalbia. These are two amazing contemporary artists working primarily in sculpture, and I've linked their websites in the show notes of this episode. As a painter, my hope was to learn the real nitty-gritty about what it takes to sustain a sculpture practice, like the special considerations and constraints a sculptor must contend with to continue working and showing in the medium. I found their comments and insights fascinating, and I hope you will too. Let us now enter the hallowed halls of sculpture. You are listening to Pep Talks for Artists, a podcast offering small words of encouragement to all those shuffling along the artist's road. I'm your host, Amy Toledo. We slanted more towards painting and talking about painters because that was our specialty. But I think it's time to let the sculptors reign. And it's just going to be, I think, a breath of fresh air to hear what you guys have to say about sculpture, about being a sculptor. And I just cannot wait to hear what you guys, you know, will say in response to the conversation. I wanted to welcome Courtney Puckett and Carl Dalbia to the talk. So excited to have you. And I'll just do quick bios so that everybody kind of knows what you're up to. First is Courtney Puckett. She's a sculptor and founder of White Rock Center for the Arts, which is an outdoor sculpture venue. She's recently shown her work at Hudson House in Hudson, Geary Contemporary, and Hess Flattow. And then next is Carl Dalbia, also a sculptor, obviously a sculptor, recently shown at a solo show at Hess Flattow. And I saw the show. It was really, really cool. And also has had a piece at Art OMI, an outdoor sculpture park, and has had a recent two-person show at Mother Gallery and some work at Hudson House also. So those are just really abbreviated bios. Of course, if you visit their websites, you can find out more about what they're up to, what's coming up. Hey, welcome, Carl. Welcome, Courtney.
Good to be with you all.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm so excited about the conversation we're about to have. I mean, no pressure, but I think it's going to be awesome.
We're feeling the pressure.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, feeling pressure. Okay. That's what I like. No, I'm just kidding.
Sweaty hands.
As I mentioned, I am obviously steeped in the painting tradition, so I'm pretty much a sculpture know-nothing. But I wanted to read this quick Martin Puryear quote that I found from a 2007 Time magazine interview called Quick Talk, and it was written by or interviewed by Richard Lacayo. And I thought it was really interesting. He said, "It became pretty clear to me that I was more interested in making things than in making images of things." And I just wanted to read that up the top because my next question for you guys would be to maybe each describe what your recent work has been a little bit and also describe what drew you to sculpture as a medium. Courtney, do you want to go first?
Sure. Love Martin Puryear. So the quote is, instead of making images of things, making things.
Right. The things that I make are, in terms of scale, they're about the size of me, so human size. And since 2016, I've been working with found objects and repurposed textiles for many years, almost 20 years now. But since 2016, I've been working within the conceptual framework that each of the sculptures represents a different character or archetype, and they each have titles that correspond with like their occupational roles or their social roles, such as the listener, the overseer, the protector, the climber. So I think of them as figures, but with varying degrees of abstraction throughout the series. Some resemble more machines or like totems, or some are, you know, more almost completely abstract. And there's an armature that is like a skeleton that is made out of found objects, used furniture parts, old household goods like fan covers and wire planters and ironing boards, laundry baskets. And the surfaces, I think of like a skin, and that's the repurposed textiles. And that's applied by sort of wrapping, like bounding the found objects together. I do some weaving and some sewing. So I use what's readily available around me. And I really like the idea that I'm sort of using, capitalizing on the embedded carbon in the thing and using what's already been consumed and discarded. So there's a hunting and a salvaging, a transformation, a rehabilitation. So seeing potential in the stuff that, you know, sort of saving it from the landfills, and then how can it be sort of transformed into these like machine body totem characters. And then in relation to the Martin Puryear quote, I didn't start out as a sculptor. I was a very technically skilled realist painter, actually, early on. And, you know, studied traditional painting. And I, quite early on, sort of like, okay, I could technically paint really well, but I just didn't know, like, what I wanted to paint and why. And I had this very kind of pivotal moment my junior year of college when I cut apart an old suitcase, like a kind of a soft, one of those kind of like soft suitcases. And I sort of roughly hand stitched it together and hung it on the wall, thinking that it would be a surface that I would paint on. I was still trying to figure out what kind of a painter I was. And that immediacy of the material and the way that it relates to the body and kind of, you know, the immediacy of the material, the thingness of it that Martin Puryear is referring to was what really just kind of caught me in that moment. And that was like sort of, I, you know, put the paintbrush down and became an artist who collects and takes things apart and puts them back together and assembles them. And they've gradually become more and more and more freestanding. And the last thing I want to say is that as a, you know, sort of a young artist at that time, I recognize it now, two sort of early impulses. And one is to be ecologically conscientious and then also feminist. So insisting on textiles and you know, sort of domestic material as equal to paint or equal to, you know, sort of hard-edged, historically masculine materials and process.
Well, thank you so much for that. It's almost like your work has been moving slowly off the wall over the years and is now taking, it's like its own, you know, persona living or spirit animus in the room.
Yeah, I mean, I still very much think like a painter. I'm, you know, 100% engaged in dialogue with what's happening in sculpture and contemporary sculpture and history of sculpture, but I'm not really a sculptor. Like I really do think, I think more like a painter.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of overlap right now, especially with like I sat on a panel for a grant and in the painting category, and there was all this fabric work that was also in the category with paint on it. So I think boundaries and segments are starting to blend, and I think that's positive in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm kind of also starting to do that. I mean, not with fabric, but blending stuff. And I think it's good. thank you so much, Courtney. And Carl, hi, welcome to Pep Talks.
Hi.
Hey,
hi.
I was wondering if you would mind just describing to the audience, I'm sure many people already know your work well, but would you mind just describing what's in your studio now and also what drew you to sculpture way back when?
Yeah, I guess maybe, well, my studio right now, I have some clay works going on, which are more like kind of some of the things I've been doing for many years, these kind of veiled works where there's a kind of highly articulated surface, which is something that, I don't know, I sort of got fascinated with, and it's kind of sustained me for many years, this idea of sort of giving this surfeit of visual information, but at the same time veiling the piece, and that kind of that contradiction, and that idea that you know, that it's really the contradiction is the thing that's sort of driving things. Not, you know, at a certain point I decided I didn't need to try and create a harmonious object, but just a kind of appropriately contradictory one. And so that kind of, you know, set me along this path, and that's kind of continued in a different way with like these larger fabricated works that I've done, that are, you know, quite monolithic, and the recent work that I showed at Hesse Fleitau, and it's kind of more, you know, certainly like chromatically much brighter and kind of more relative to a lot of kind of 70s macho kind of sculpture, but
but the color is, it takes it away out of that.
Yeah, the color takes it out, and also just like, you know, the sort of soft, relaxed pose.
Yeah,
where the sculptures are kind of slumping around the gallery, so it's,
there's
like
a lot of emotion in them. Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of kind of emotion, and it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like the softest, goofiest macho sculpture or something.
And
Yeah, that humor, and once I hit on that humor in my work, I, you know, when I was younger, it was all, everything was like super serious. And then once I got humor in, I was like, aha, okay, that's, we're going to hold on to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so since then, I'm always looking for, again, like these appropriately contradictory moments with some humor, and this idea of these objects being, you know, and not, or, you know, what if we had something that was minimal and Baroque, you know, why do we have to kind of land on one side or the other? It's more interesting to kind of be on that, either like flitting back and forth between the two, or somehow kind of like balancing, along that knife's edge. And that kind of brought a certain whimsy into the work. And to be honest, a lot changed when I had a kid and I started like, you know, reading a lot of like kids books and Dr. Seuss and so on. I feel,
oh, really?
I really do. So yeah, that's what's going on now. How I started doing sculpture, I, you know, my mom was a hobbyist sculptor when I was a kid, and always she did ceramics, and but figures mostly, kind of surreal, kind of if Marc Chagall made sculptures, so that was kind of what they look like. But she was always trying to get me to make sculpture, and I never really wanted to when I was a kid. I just wanted to draw. So I was surprised that when I went to RISD soon after, you know, when you go to RISD, you have to take a kind of foundation series in which you need to do drawing, 2D design, and sculpture, and 3D. And I was kind of surprised that I was just very taken by sculpture. It was a surprise to me. And
your mom won.
My mom won. Moms always win. That's listen to your mom, whatever your mom says.
That's the moral.
That's the moral of the story. Mic drop. Moms win. But yeah, it was kind of a surprise to me. And I also thought, you know, suddenly, like, especially with clay, and I really enjoyed figure modeling, and I was good at it, you know. I could just kind of sit down, like some kids can play at the piano. I could just kind of sit and like observe the figure and make things, and it was always interesting, never boring to me. And it was interesting to hear that Courtney started out as a kind of realist painter, but I really started out as a figurative sculptor. And I really, that's what I thought I was going to do.
So like, and you were sculpting human figures.
Human figures, anatomy, all of that. Like, I just was really fascinated by it. And so it certainly would have been a surprise to me to see, you know, if I could have leapt forward and seen where my work was now. But it's just in a series of, you know, tacks, I ended up here. And I don't know, I guess I'm kind of got more interested in being on that figuration abstraction line, you know, like, again, like back to that contradiction, or like having both, having my cake and eating it too, you know, like this, that ended up being more interesting to me, and somehow carrying through this very old fashioned idea of a statue somehow, not even just a sculpture, you know, something that was connected to some very old tradition and a kind of frozen moment in time or something. And I think that, you know, I think that that kind of is what informs a lot of the work. And it also, you know, it ramps up the humor, because there is some kind of serious statue often trying to get out, while there's this kind of, you know, interfacing with goofiness or humor or something. So I think that that tension is really important.
Yeah, I think that's a really juicy place to work as an artist, in the in-between spaces. You know, like that quote everyone says, you know, was it Walt Whitman, or I contain multitudes? I really resonate with that. And I think all the artists on the stage also love to work in that little in-between space. And I think it's a rich mine to mine in. Thank you for that. This is really fascinating. You guys, I'm learning so much about you, and I'm just really loving it. I wanted to switch to context, because I'm a painter, right? So I make a painting and I pop it on a wall and boom, I'm out of there, you know? But I have a feeling, I have a hunch that that is not the case for sculptors, that there's a lot more consideration that has to go into putting on an exhibition, for example. And I found this other quote, if you don't mind. I love quotes. I'm a quote magpie, by Jonathan Silver. And it was an interview in Bomb Magazine. He says, "The less clear the context in which art is going to be experienced, the more important it is for the artist to establish clearly the context he wants to establish. In other words, he's got to give it a context, because there's none for it out there. A painter doesn't have quite the same problem, because he can create the world within the borders of the painting." So it really was interesting to me, because I started to think, okay, if I'm putting on a show as a sculptor, I'm not thinking like a painter. I'm not just composing the borders of my rectangle. But in fact, the whole gallery is the rectangle in which I'm composing. So I was wondering if you guys, if that resonated with you, or if you could talk a little bit about, maybe there's a sculptor in the audience that would love to hear, like, how you defend your context when you're, you know, starting a show. And anyone could weigh in, if depending on who wants to speak.
I think at a certain point, I was maybe moving into installation, but I wanted to maintain that world within a border within my sculptures, so that they could move around and travel anywhere and kind of bring their own little world with them. So I'm not a sculptor who really thinks too much about site specificity. So I think more about the relationships between the sculptures when I have like multiple ones in a room. The physicality of them, the scale, how it relates to our body, you know, and it relates to the architecture. Obviously, they have a kind of presence, but I really wanted the work to be able to hold its own anywhere it goes. I find that when I'm in a show with other artists and there's painting or wall work, that my work sort of tends to go more like it gets I don't get the wall space. I get booted away from the wall.
And Carl, did you want to weigh in on it too, on the topic of context?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of agree with Courtney for the most part. I like to kind of bring my context and have an idea that the sculptures have a kind of contained inner life, or, you know, wherever they happen to be. And I guess I realized with this recent show, they're almost kind of always hanging out, and there's this interior quality that they have, which is interesting. And then speaking of the walls, you know, this last show, I'd never installed so many pieces, you know, sitting against walls, flopping against walls, leaning against walls. And that was super interesting to kind of ban that, you know, to really interact with the architecture, I guess. And then I installed some of them out in Long Island, at Duck Creek Art Center in East Hampton against these kind of weathered shingles. And it was really interesting to see the difference in context. But I do think that they can always kind of play in some contained way wherever they are. You know, if you lean them on a street pole in New York on a street corner, they're fine. If you put them in a tree in Central Park, they're fine, or in a gallery and so on. So I guess I've always had that, I don't know, I've always had that thing that I didn't want to rely too much on context with my work. I wanted them to have to be these super normal objects wherever they were that had some kind of interior energy or something that kind of spoke for themselves.
Yeah, and I think you really achieved that. I mean, but I think to your point, Carl, that if you took one piece out, it would have its own kind of living spirit in it that's like saggy, humorous, kind of emotional weight, and it could go anywhere. But there was something about when you see all the work composed within a white box that it's like a little bit, it's something different or something more, almost like a family or a group of related creatures all living within a room. And that's something that doesn't quite happen with two-dimensional work.
That's true. I always think of my work as some kind of dysfunctional extended family.
I don't mean to say like, totally it is, but it has a feeling of a family or a group of like creatures. And I could say the same for everyone. And okay, so there's certain things I really want to talk about, but I guess the juiciest question, I want to get to everything, but I need to ask you guys, do you think painters have it easy? Like, do you think that, and I'm expecting you to say yes. So, do you think painters have it easier than sculptors? And if so, in what?
Yes. Well, you know, kind of in a way. I mean, it's certainly much easier to store. That's for sure. And I think that people are, one of the nice things about painting, back to the installation question, is that, you know, people have just accepted the convention that you just hang a painting on the wall and you look at it. And it's one of these things you have to deal with when you're a sculptor, this kind of stuff of like, oh, why would you put it on a base? You know, Brancusi made his own bases. Maybe you should create this or that, or, you know what I mean? There's always kind of like a host of questions that come along with sculpture. And, you know, there's often just much more labor and technique. But the hard thing about painting is it's kind of more of like, I mean, I guess the thing about sculpture is like it's out here with us, and I feel like there's an element of it that's like building a house or something if you kind of stay at it. Whereas painting has got this poetic thing, you know. I mean, as you guys probably all know, I was married to a painter for a long time, and sometimes she would have great strides and then lose weeks of work in like a day. And so that seemed pretty stressful about being a painter, this kind of magic thing that could happen or kind of not happen. And you could go backwards, which I really can't stand. And I just like to be kind of putting one brick in the wall at, you know, every day, at least I'm kind of making progress towards my goal once I kind of know what I'm doing. So yes, painting may be easier, but it's not a cakewalk.
Yeah, it has its own challenges, as Jackie could attest to, I'm sure. But everyone, if you've not heard of Jackie Sococcio, please look up her work. She's Carl's, sadly deceased wife, but she's a wonderful painter, definitely worth checking out. And Courtney, what's your opinion about the how painters have it?
Well,
roast me.
Yeah. It's a little bit of both. I think for sure they have it easier in a commercial sense. It seems to me like that galleries. Yeah. Like let's get to it.
We want the nitty gritty.
Yeah. It seems to me in my experience that, you know, galleries, it's hard enough to sell a painting, but it is much easier to sell a painting than a sculpture. A lot of the response that I get is like, oh, sculpture's hard. Sculpture's hard. It's hard to sell, hard to sell, hard to sell. So there's that. But I think it's also, I think of sculpture a little bit as like the miscellaneous pile in relation to academia, which is how I am an art professor. And that's how I've chosen to support myself rather than off of you know, the sale of my work. And even within that, it's like the expectation to know, you know, woodworking and metals and ceramics and be a conceptual performance artist, you know, it's like that, that's just everything. Whereas like painters, do you paint with oils or acrylic? Is it abstract or realist? It's a lot, but I think how to sustain is making things modular, making things lightweight. I try not to make anything larger than what I can handle myself, because I can't necessarily have the expectation that I'm going to be able to hire people, or the places where I'm showing the work will hire people to help. So, but at the same time, I think it's more rarefied to be a sculptor, especially in the place where we all live, you know, around New York City. And I think where it's harder for a painter is that there just are so many painters, and there are a lot of painters that paint very similarly. And I think I imagine it's hard to really distinguish yourself as a painter, whereas with sculpture, again, like it's maybe because of all of these logistical and financial and storage and all of the above, just so it seems more rarefied.
It seems like such a banal question, but I wanted to ask you guys, like, how do you store it all? That's what I really want to know. Like, Courtney and Carl, like, how do you store your work? Or does it keep you from...
You know, it's funny, because when I first moved to New York and I worked for the painter Harvey Quaidman, and he found out I was a sculptor, he said, sculpture, the art of storage. I was like, what are you talking about, old man? And that ain't going to be me. And then pretty quickly, it was me. So anyway, I decided at a certain, I moved to the country. We built a big studio, so I do have a decent amount of room. But even so, it gets filled up. So I have a working rule, which is if it's bigger than a dog, it has to be able to live outside.
Oh yeah, because your work really jumped in scale. I mean, it was all, you know, it's always large, but this latest show was really big. So how do you store those large pieces?
Well, once, you know, they're fabricated aluminum pieces. So with auto body paint, so they're designed to go outside. So basically, you know, if they don't sell and they come back, you can just put them outside.
Oh, smart. That's a really smart tip.
That's what I mean. Like the bronzes can go outside, the marbles can go outside, you know, but anything that gets, if it's too big, it has to be able to live outside. Otherwise, it's just too impractical. Also, there's a lot of mold storage when you do bronzes. So you're always storing something that's, by the nature of it, bigger than the actual sculpture itself. You know what I mean?
You mean the bronze would collect mold and you'd have to do some...
No.
Collect mold. Oh my God, I'm so dumb.
Painter mistake.
After nine... Yeah, classic painter. Classic. That was
I
get it. The mold that you pour the press. Got it. Roger that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of mold storage also. Even if those pieces sell, you still have to deal with the mold, so that's all.
It seems like there's a lot of more opportunity for sculptors to do stuff in the public space and outdoors than, you know, like curious about where there is support for indoor public spaces. Like my work really doesn't live outside. I've been making these repurposed rope banners that it's like another kind of, I guess, body of work. I don't want to say side project. I don't really want to say body of work, but it's another project that can live outside. And that's a very recent thing that I've been doing. And that does open up a lot more possibilities for my work to be in the public realm. And be outside, but my primary sculptures as they are cannot live outside. I'm sort of like asking the universe, where is there support for public indoor sculpture? If anybody has any ideas.
And then, and do you store, do you also do the storage space route then?
Storage. I'm actually, we were looking into this, this past summer, we were looking into getting some shipping containers, but because of all of the like pandemic and the delays with stuff, all of these companies that sort of broker the shipping containers from the ports all said that they just don't have them or have as many as they normally do or did, and that their prices are like double. So it's not the best time to try to get shipping container, but that's an idea that we have.
It also makes it a little challenging for studio visits. I had some studio visits last week, and I actually asked the people coming, you know, is there certain works that you are particularly interested in seeing? And it's not like, you know, a painting studio where you just have a bunch of them leaning against the wall or in a rack. That's another kind of logistical strategy to have to, you know, figure out. You don't just have everything sitting there.
Courtney has a yearly sculptural invitation, sculptural invitational. I said that wrong, but you get the drift. But it's called White Rock Center for the Arts. And Courtney has a lovely large lawn, and she invites sculptors from New York City and Hudson Valley to participate and install a piece. And they may be people that don't usually do outdoor sculpture, and they kind of give it a crack there. And I think it's a, such a generous thing to do that Courtney and her partner do, to invite sculptors.
Do you always burn them after, Courtney, or was that just for Christina?
If they don't come pick it up after a year, yes, it gets
tough love. Tough love.
I really want to see, Carl, your sculptures and trees. You mentioned earlier that they could it could live in a tree.
Yeah, well, you know, it's sort of funny because I have a lot of property now where I live. So I think eventually they're going to, you know, certain things will just migrate like out into the woods and just hang out against trees. I think that's going to happen.
I love that idea.
We're going to do it.
I wanted to ask you guys about drawing. I mean, I'm sorry, that's a very painterly question, but I noticed that you use drawing, and it's a very important part of your practices. So I was just wondering if you guys could, you know, touch on it, how you use it.
For me, it's become pretty integral to my practice, especially with these latest fabricated works, because they're really, you know, much more relative to architecture. So the drawings are quite important in the projecting of the piece. But even over and above those, I do a lot of these drawings last few years that are very, very flat drawings. They're very 2D, but at the same time, to me, they indicate possible sculptures, basically. So then I'll go through my flat files after I've done a bunch of these drawings and then think about, you know, which of them I might want to think about turning into a sculpture. So for me, it's pretty important.
And it seems like a little bit, like you said, when you were a kid, you couldn't stop drawing, and then you found your way to sculpture. So it seems like it's very true to you.
Yeah, definitely. And then in a way, I kind of found my way back to drawing. So, yes.
Cool. Thank you so much. And Courtney, I know that you do some amazing drawings. Could you talk?
Yeah, definitely. I'm in the same kind of camp with Carl on the importance of drawing with my work. And I think of drawing as a kind of 2D home base or like conceptual sort of map for working more intuitively in 3D. So they're never really like drawn plans for sculptures, but I definitely start out more often than not with like a doodle or a sketch. And then sometimes when I'm lost in a piece, I'll go back to drawing, kind of find my way back to what I had initially sort of intended for the piece. But it's never really like a one-to-one. What's interesting is recently the drawings have been more collages. I was thinking about how that kind of makes sense with how my work is assembled.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And also, welcome to the Collage Club.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't know if maybe there's part of me that worries that like maybe it's just my attention span for drawing is kind of shot. And so cutting and pasting, but also my work in and of itself, like the sculptures in and of itself are very linear. A lot of the found elements that I use are very linear shapes and forms. And so my sculptures are often referred to as like drawings in space.
Wow. Yeah, I can totally see that. They're very linear, the frames and the almost skeletal. Mm-hmm. And have you ever exhibited your drawings?
Gosh, I don't have an answer for that right off the top of my head. Have I shown, I'm going to show them soon at a space that is called Furnace Works on Paper. Cool. And so I'll be showing them alongside the sculptures. That's in Connecticut, an artist-run gallery by the artist Kathleen Kuka. Shout out to Furnace Art on Paper. And so, yeah.
That's what I wondered, because I asked you in particular, because I think Carl has as well. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. And through my Instagram lurking. But Courtney, I had seen your beautiful drawings in your studio recently at the latest White Rock Center for the Arts exhibition. And I was curious. I was like, these are amazing. I would love to see them in a show. But that could be the painter talking to. Sorry, 2D, 2D, 2D. But anyway, I wanted to ask you guys, because this is Pep Talk, so we like to kind of have more of like a bit of an encouraging vibe. So imagine that there's like a young sculptor in the audience. What would you give, like what piece of advice would you give or to your younger self in terms of going in the future?
Don't do it.
Kyle! What is your real advice?
My real advice is, I guess my real advice would be to do something at hand, you know, something that's doable, like at a hardware store to kind of deal, you know what I mean? Like sometimes when you're younger and you see like more established artists and you go, oh, well, yeah, but they're doing all this stuff and like bronze or welded pieces or whatever, but there's a lot that you can understand just like at your local hardware store, making interesting things happen. And sometimes those limitations lead you to some interesting things and the kind of engineering issues in sculpture, you know, and that is a big difference between painting and sculpture. You know, the sculpture has to stand up somehow. So to try and, you know, think about some of those engineering issues, they can be a challenge, but they can also be, you know, a plus and inform the work and, I don't know, help you kind of move forward with sculpture. And when I first started out, I was doing a bunch of plaster sculptures that I did mostly by like scavenging plywood off the street. And then I would wrap them in burlap soaked in plaster and then spoon plaster on and kind of shave it off with a rasp. And, you know, it was kind of pretty basic stuff, but it got me going.
That's really good, really, really good advice and smart advice. And what about you?
I like what Carl was saying about the engineering. I feel like that's the part of sculpture that I personally have struggled the most with, because I didn't really identify that way as an early artist and was intimidated by like going to the wood shop. And so I kind of didn't really assert myself in those places and spaces. And so now I'm sort of having, especially as an educator myself and teaching sculpture, kind of having to go way back to, you know, sculpture 101 and like learning new things. And so I would say like, stay open to what you, I don't know, like don't assume that it might not be something that could come in handy later on down the road.
Great advice.
I would agree with everything. Sustainability of the practice is really quite important. You know, you have to, Courtney, you have to do something that you can carry forward. There's one thing about the storage issue that I came to mind when we were talking about that I forgot to mention, was maybe we could just have everything 3D scanned and then just have it on a hard drive.
And then somehow make it into an NFT. Yeah.
Then in the future, they'll just make in the future, robots will be able to make it or something. Well, just thinking even about people who do really work with digital stuff or scanning and milling, you could, in theory, have all of your pieces just as digital files that could be kind of made as you need it. That's the complete other side of object people like we all are.
Yeah, but what if, like, the cloud crashes?
It's not going to crash.
Famous last words. Maybe that I'm just old. I'm like, the cloud's going to crash one day.
Yeah. It's fine. We have all our objects in our storage.
Yeah. tucked away, safe and cozy and warm in our climate controlled. Is there anything that I didn't touch on, you guys, that you'd like to say?
Maybe we should get together as a business model and just build sculpture storage and rent it out to people.
Seems like there's a need.
I'm in.
I'm in.
Okay. What about a business that places sculpture?
That's actually a great idea. You just move them around. Yeah, Courtney, that's really smart.
Or permanently in places, but that's a lot harder. But move them around, get them circulating in the world, get them out of storage and circulating. There are plenty of places. I mean, I think about there's already established things in hospitals and airports and that kind of thing. But I don't know. It just seems like there should be a lot more of that for sculptors.
It's interesting to think about, too, even in the context of all these monuments that are coming down from all these, historical figures who, were on the wrong side of history. And so there are all these kind of empty plinths and things. It was kind of an interesting idea to have just a rotating sculpture instead of having this monument that all has to be decided and, and the community, everybody has to, you could just have something rotating, which might be kind of interesting, too, as a kind of roving thing. I like that idea of sculptures getting around.
I really want this to happen.
Yeah, let's do it. Mic drop.
That was the final mic drop. Let's just take down a Robert E. Lee.
And we're done.
Let's take down a Robert E. Lee and pop you guys up there.
And we're out.
Case closed. We fixed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Done.
Take that, the South. I can say that because I'm from the South. But you guys, I just wanted to give you a hearty thank you for, spending an hour and a half with me and talking about sculpture tonight. I really enjoyed every single second. My painters, the scales have fallen from my painter's eyes, and I now see more clearly the plight of the sculpture. And I'm also your biggest fan. So thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing your clubhouse.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you guys again so much for coming. Thank you to the audience for listening. Really, really fun time tonight. Thanks, you guys, and have a great night. You've been listening to Pep Talks for Artists. If you'd like to check out our Instagram, please find us at Pep Talks for Artists. We really appreciate you stopping by, and we'll see you next time.
Mic drop.